Sir Thomas Devine, we thank you for coming. We welcome you to the interview session as you join us with your opening statement from 3 to 5 minutes.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, we did go around the room and shook hands with everybody, so we don't have to go around and introduce ourselves. Good.
Good afternoon. Let me start by saying thank you for bringing me here today to be a part of your process. I'm humbled and honored and privileged to be one of the few that have been advanced to share with you my willingness to serve the University of Minnesota as a region candidate. I'd also like to thank you, each of you, as volunteers for the role that you play, that you are playing as active participants in this process. An active volunteer myself for more than 30 years at the University of Minnesota, I clearly understand the role that volunteers play. Within the complexities of the university, I acknowledge the separations between the Board of Regents, the President, the administration, the faculty, and the staff. Moreover, I am reminded by a quote from a longtime family friend and a regular visitor to my family's cabin up on the north shore of Lake Superior and a former mentor to me, former Governor and Regent Elmer Anderson, said, "The duty of the Board of Regents is not to direct the university president, but rather to nurture the role. I take seriously the separations of duties and the preservation of the institutional autonomy along with the board's required roles of accountability. I've had a successful career in the insurance industry, becoming the fourth generation of my family to own and operate a business here in Minnesota. As an owner and as an employer, I've applied best practices, budgeting responsibilities, and understand practical applications, profitability, and meeting the needs of thousands of customers. I've reviewed with my wife, Pam, and my 3 sons the 6-year time commitment and activities of a regent. 2 of my sons will be receiving their Eagle Scout Award next week, and one of them reminded me that it probably won't be as demanding as an 87-mile backpacking trip with a group of young men or 47 nights that my sons and I put our head down and are on the ground in tents during 2009 in the activities that we did together. These are demonstrations not of physical stamina, but rather a balance of quality family life along with church activities. My leadership style in all 13 of my major volunteering activities during my life has consisted of diligent, energetic, vigorous involvement within each. There have been considerable financial involvements of audits, reviews, budget, cost controls, and oversight accountabilities. The scope of these have been from a few million dollars to tens of millions of dollars. The success of my involvement has always leveraged on focusing on what's best for the organization as a whole. My board role has always been to carefully review, question, find commonalities, and move towards a collaborative agreement and support the final outcomes. This is the role of a regent. The responsibilities of adopting and using mentors and then becoming a mentor are the true measurements of success and outcome for board members during their terms and become their lasting legacy. And I am very committed to that process. My interest in becoming a regent is simple. It is an extension of all the activities that I've participated in. I possess a high level of understanding of regent demands, the understandings of declining state revenues, rising costs, changing demographics, competition for students, tuition impact, campus housing shortages, workforce planning, and now transformational transition planning. The regent's work must center so that the dramatic does not become the traumatic. Governor Dayton best summed up the state's leadership needs last week before the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce by quoting his father, and he said, "We all must be making fact-based decisions. I agree with this, and this is the role of the regents." He also followed with another old Dayton family maxim, when the customers are doing well, we do well. And I believe this applies to the University of Minnesota also. When the university is in tune with its mission, its customers, its students, its research efforts, they all perform well. There are many opportunities that are afforded. The university will enjoy a greater positioning and enhanced image, as well as earning more public appreciation and legislative investment. We have the shared responsibility, the university, the business community, the legislature, and the public, to collaborate on what we need to do what's best for Minnesota. Research to business, private, public collaboration efforts do create jobs. They provide new sources of revenue for the university and can further impact the campus as we move forward to our world-class status that we all strive for. My university involvements are numerous and too many to share in these brief moments that we have together, but let me just quickly say my past involvements and my current involvements are well documented, and I'm in touch with the students. Currently, I serve on the Rec Sports Alumni Association and assist in their efforts on their new $58 million expansion of the student faculty facility. I participate in the steering committee on the new $38 million nonprofit campus housing and Greek Village project, which has now solicited some $400,000 of working capital and seed money commitments in order to further advance the issues of nonprofit student housing at the University of Minnesota. I actively also participate in the university's legislative network, and I'm a life member and have participated in many alumni association events. It is also noteworthy that I have worked actively within the Greek system for over 20 years. The system, for the most part, has been aligned and leveraged themselves academically to the mission, and I'm told that four-year graduation rates are higher than any other student grouping at the university. My chapter, which I've been an advisor for most of those years, has a wonderful commitment of four-year graduation, and its senior class last spring, 100% of the people graduated within the four-year time frame that the institution has held out. They've also additionally raised almost $60,000 each of the past 5 years in their volunteering and their student activities and charitable work. In concluding, I just want to share that Eric Kaler, our new president, he drew the picture of what we are doing well and what the challenges we will need to support. He is focused on academic excellence at all levels and specifically raising our four-year 47% graduation percentage. Not only do we need to review his school's website and look closely at what he is doing to understand the depth of what he's talking about, but he also commits himself to building better campus life. It is rich, it is embracing, and it is diverse, and his vision needs to be supported by those electing the regents. Thank you.
All right, Ms. Harriet Porter.
This is not the most strategic question, but I'm going to ask because you included it in your opening comments. SAE is your fraternity.
Yes.
How have you accomplished the four-year 100% graduation?
Well, it's been a combination of things that we've done. First of all, I think that our leadership of our alumni involvement is exceptional. There's a board, an active board, with quite a few people that participate in that activity. We have built a $800,000 scholarship fund that I was very much involved with back starting in the 1980s. That $800,000 fund has been emulated across the Greek communities all over the United States. In fact, I was told at a meeting several months ago there's almost $70,000 that has been, or $70 million that's been raised across the country emulating what we've done at Minnesota alone as one individual chapter. I think in the focus of four-year graduation, it really comes into mentoring and advising. I don't want to use the term flippantly, but I'm often considered to be a campus parent. And when I look at a campus parent, I don't view our roles as being parents, but I can step back from that role and say our role is that of mentoring and setting the role models and putting out the expectations of what we expect from our students and those that are qualifying for scholarships.
Thank you.
Richard Newell.
You touched on it in your opening introduction, but could you talk a bit more about the role of governance in the context of the Board of Regents versus management? Kind of the first part, and then the second part of the question is talk about kind of what makes a successful board and not a successful board, and kind of what you bring to make sure that this would be a very healthy organization?
Well, the boards that I've participated in, the activities that I've done for the last 30 years, I really center around kind of building teamwork within the board members. And I think that first and foremost, there has to be a level of camaraderie in terms of common mission, common goals of what it is they're striving for. It doesn't mean that there's complete harmony of agreement all the time on every issue, because I think the function of the board is to debate that and work through those issues. But I think what's important is at the end of that process, people come together in a common way and agree on what they're going to do, make the decision, and then go ahead, and everybody is supportive of that decision, whatever that is. And I think that's an important aspect of what the Board of Regents really represents, is having that shared collective ability to be able to come together and work through the various issues. I know on the Minnesota Daily article that was published in December, they were critical of the fact that the decisions there's rarely dissension or whatever in that process. And I'm comfortably convinced that there's a lot that goes on that doesn't just necessarily happen in that one room. And the debate and the healthy exercises that go on is all part of that process that needs to happen and develop.
Can you talk more about the governance versus management piece?
Yeah, and then relative to governance, the role of the governance is to set policy, review policy. It is not to manage or actively manage. And I said right at the beginning, that separation needs to be clearly understood. I know sometimes I hear people talking about the regents should have more of an advocacy role, and they should be elected with a particular theme or a platform or whatever it is that they're doing. And I don't view the regents operating in that capacity. Our job is to support the president and work with the president, help the president identify what those goals and what those things are, and then work through what it is that we need to support, what we need to do to support that mission that he's out to accomplish.
I have a follow-up question. What role do you think the Board of Regents has with respect to the legislature?
It's an interesting question right now. I think that I look at the relationship with the legislature, and this isn't to be critical, but I think that there is much that needs to be done to rebuild and to build a different type of relationship with our legislature. I think that a lot more could be done to sell the benefits and the things that the university is doing. Particularly, I'm sure with a lot of new legislators, they don't have a good grasp of the work that the university does and how it functions. Certainly, the issues of accountability are well publicized, and I think that there's going to be a greater demand or a greater push going forward as dollars become tighter within the state, that we, the University of Minnesota, be more accountable for what's going on. And we have to be in tune with what is being asked of us, but yet we shouldn't exceed the authorities that we have as a land-grant institution. We've got to be very careful of that. But it's going to be a challenging times. As the dollars get tighter, the relationship has got to be really fostered, and we have to go back down to the grassroots and let people know and build individual relationships with individual legislators to influence decisions that are going to be made that affect the university.
Sylvia Catalan.
Hi. It hit to home in your application when you talked about your most valuable experience being that of an undergraduate at the University of Minnesota. I myself am a student there right now. I'm a third-year student, and I wanted to hear your thoughts a little bit more about how you would reach out or what could be done to reach out more to students, not specifically in fraternities or sororities or in that sort of section or portion of the students, but as tuition, faces increases in the future, this four-year graduation rate is at risk of, not increasing as much as we'd like it to. So I would like to hear more your thoughts about, how does the university present to the legislature those markers that you talked about in accountability, and as well as how would you think you could go about reaching out to the students that aren't involved in these specific scholarship that I'm working on.
As an undergraduate, I was blessed with a lot of mentoring opportunities, both within the institution and outside the institution. And I look at that and say, I think that that's one thing that needs to be expanded and fostered, is the ability to be able to have more mentoring opportunities. Clearly right now, if I could put my finger on any one thing on four-year graduation, I think that it should be, there should be a much more sophisticated level of advising, direct one-on-one student advising. I know that with some of the schools, you know, they only have, they're only required to have one advising meeting really in 4 years, and advising is available. But if we look at the role models of a lot of other schools and, you know, other successes in other Big Ten schools, if we look at the private college system here in Minnesota, I think the ability for us to allocate resources or to take apart the functions of advising and have more going on, more student interaction with advising, I think would help significantly. It gets back to that parent role that I was talking about. When we look at the student experience, I think that the other thing is those students that are on campus, engaged in campus activities, volunteering efforts, whatever it is, Greek or non-Greek, and it doesn't necessarily have to be Greek, those activities that they get involved with will have some type of a ongoing rolling effect in terms of how they come out the other end at graduation. And I really believe in some of the visitations I've been doing with my two sons and looking at schools here this past summer, one of the things that really got drilled down into me that I've not really heard before was the whole issue of the issues of looking for a job, the resume building, the activities that they do are all part of the networking, all of those, the mentoring, all of that, that works all towards a career at the other end. And obviously we've got some schools that are doing a wonderful job of that at the university, but there's others that have, you know, could be probably doing a whole lot more from what I can see or what my advantage point is of seeing students.
Sure. So I agree with that, by the way. What about how to communicate, how the university can communicate the improvement that it's been doing to the legislature? Because you talk about in your application how it's important to collaborate between the two sides. And earlier you touched on that a little bit, but it sort of seemed like the university is in charge of showing, how well it's been doing in order to secure funding. But what about, that more of a two-way highway sort of relationship?
Well, it really comes back to if we separate, who does what. If we really separate, the job that is now the first step of which is, we've hired a new president that's going to set direction, policy, tone of where we're going to go as an institution. And then those people that he then moves forward to build his administration and the people that he's going to be working with are going to have to unfold what those guidelines are, what those things are. And I think the collaboration, I don't see instant collaboration like, say, for example, this legislative session, but what we're really looking at is what's going to happen over his tenure as the president and the direction that he sets at the very top there of the institution to encourage collaboration or to develop these relationships that we need to have as an institution. And heavy lifting is going to happen within his assembled staff and those people that he works with, within the university community, the staff, faculty, all of those people. The focus has got to be there. But he sets the tone. His job is to set the tone. And the board's job is to support and clarify and all the other components of that. But it's really a centralized responsibility, as I see it, out of the president's office initially.
Okay.
Jerry Rogers.
Thank you. You might have answered a little bit of this, but I'm kind of intrigued. In your application, you talk about several major themes that you think the university is facing. Mm-hmm. The first one you listed was the academic mission versus the university mission for four-year graduation. Are those in conflict in some way, or what are your views about the academic mission of the university?
Well, there's a couple of things here that I look at in terms of academic mission. One of the challenges we have as the money gets tighter here, and I think it's not only now, but it's going down the road. It started back with Ken Keller and the commitment to focus on what is it that we're trying to do in terms of academic mission here. We have a lot of different majors in a lot of different schools within the University of Minnesota. The question is going to probably get asked at some point, do we need to have that broad of a perspective in terms of education here, all under one roof, meaning all different campuses here at the University of Minnesota. And I think those challenges are going to be, I think those challenges are going to become much more difficult going forward financially to support all of the activities that we are now doing. And so to that end, we're going to have to do some things better than what we are. And there's going to be, as I said, there's going to be some pain in terms of how things realign or how things get reorganized at some point within the structure, just based on the financial constraints. The issue of four-year graduation, I'm passionate about. I really think that we, as the flagship institution of higher education in Minnesota, need to do better than what we are. And I think that there's very few of us that probably don't agree with that. The issue is really getting down to figure out what is it that we need to be doing here to bring those percentages up. And that's not in saying that we haven't moved in the right direction, but clearly there's a lot more that we need to do, and we just need to get to a higher plateau than where we are. The cost of going to school and having people in school, I think, you know, the percentages that I'm familiar with in the accountability to you report that was in the Regents' agenda packet back a couple months ago, it talked very specifically about 47-something% of four-year graduation, and then it talked about 66% after 5 years and 68% after 6 years. Well, I step back to that and I say the investment that the state's making, we should probably be demanding more in terms of what those outcomes are. And that, and obviously the process of physical selection, of moving to the top 10% of the students, is going to have some impact on that as we've evolved to that these last 4 or 5 years. But I also look and say there's things like, the parents that are involved with those 10%, that upper 10% of the students that are coming there, they too are focused. They've always been focused on their students in high school, what their learning outcomes are. And yet, I don't think that they're really fully engaged to the levels that they probably could be, or maybe should be, or maybe would be asked to participate in terms of focusing on four-year graduation. And so it gets back into how do you do all those things, and how do you make those outcomes, come together. I know certainly in the private schools, in Minnesota, the graduation expectations are significantly higher and the outcomes are significantly higher. And it gets into, how do you take apart all those various things? I'm not an expert on the subject matter, but I understand the big picture in terms of what we need to do. And certainly as the state resources change, we need to better tool up and better prepare for our future here if education is really going to be a bedrock institutional piece of what we want for Minnesota is a firm education base. And we're going to have to do better, particularly as a flagship. As the flagship here, we need to be sending a much more clear signal of what we want from our students and the parents and those that participate with them.
Thank you.
All right. Margaret Carlson, please.
Well, I probably have a unique vantage point, having watched you for 25 years.
Yeah, you have.
And the question I'm going to ask you, you need to synthesize for this group, not in a novel, but in a soundbite. And what it is, I watched you starting to work on student housing when you were marginalized and dismissed and ignored, to the point they started to take attention. And now real progress has been made. What did you do to get from here to there in an area that I would have said was impossible?
The soundbite is tenacity. I firmly believe that part of the mission of the University of Minnesota is to provide good housing. And clearly, when we've moved from the commuter model that I grew up under, that I've watched here for most of the 30-something years at the University of Minnesota, as we've moved now fairly quickly into the new model of campus involvement and understanding that the outcomes of all of that become better, housing becomes a critical component of it. And I firmly believe that nonprofit student housing, whether it's the university housing itself or a collaboration of outside sources to build nonprofit housing, or whether it's the co-op and the other areas of nonprofit housing, are critically important. because the cost structures that are there from the private developer or the for-profit organizations that have come into the university to build housing drive up the cost of education. And to the degree that we can hold costs down for students now and over a long time horizon, I think is beneficial. But it's been a process, Margaret, as you well know. We first had to really draw a picture and say there is a shortage. And clearly right now, when I understand, like last week, there's 200 students on the waiting list, 200-plus students on the waiting list for dorm space this semester. When we start to look at the issues of students still living in lounge areas right now, or I guess they call it expanded housing, we start to take apart what it is. I mean, there's a critical shortage. And I might say also that in talking with students from other campuses, the housing shortage is universal, and the quality of that housing to fostering better educational settings and the like is needed at all the campuses. Certainly the housing up at Duluth, the housing at Morris. I think there's a real opportunity for the university to move ahead to change the environment physically, and I think that that's an important, very important venue that needs to happen.
One follow-up.
Sure.
You brought a group of volunteers together, was a part of the Brilliance, the Lynn Swans, and so forth. Now, this is really a soundbite, which means 90 seconds share with the group, because I don't want this to occupy the whole conversation. No. But this, to me, was another brilliant part of the effort, watching you from the outside.
Yeah. Clearly, I think there are a lot of committed people out there. There are a lot of university graduates that have not been asked to participate in the university affairs. Certainly the opening of the new stadium last year, certainly the activities that the Alumni Association hosts are very important, cornerstones that we should build upon. I think there's a huge group of university graduates that particularly of my age vintage that came through the commuter model and whatnot that just have not been asked to be brought back aboard in a useful way. I look at the new president was sitting here, I'd say, the outreach, the task force, some of the stuff that's now going on with the transition team that they're putting together, we should load those up with people, committed volunteers that are out there, out of the ranks of the Alumni Association, those people that have been identified that truly can be resources. And those are the same resources, once they're brought into the fold, can be very useful in the legislative arena, in fundraising, and in cultivating donors. And I think that is an outreach piece that just needs to just greatly expand from where it is right now.
All right. Sonia Cairns, please.
Thank you. You've been around the university for a long time and have been very involved. And I would guess, back to the governance issue, that you've looked at the regents over a period of time and thought, if I were a regent, I would do. And I'd like you to be bold and think about, if you were identified as one of the next regents, what would you bring? And you don't have to name everything. What's something that you would just be dying to do once you become a regent and get settled?
That's a hard question for somebody that's been around as long as I've been around. I think that the issue that I would want to bring greatest focus on is really to the customer, the student. I think that there is a little bit of detachment in terms of how the administration and the students maybe interact right now. I don't say that in a negative or a criticism, because it's functionary. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, when I look at I've been at maybe 38 or 40 schools in my tenure in working on the model of the building scholarship funds. When I look at those schools, there is a lot of interaction, particularly in smaller schools, with all sorts of people within the administration and the regents, the governing boards or whatever. I was out at Washington and Lee University out in Virginia, and the trustees of that school interface on a regular basis. They have, and some of them even teach or they share in the classroom certain activities of what they're doing. Those are the kinds of things I think that we could be doing. I, as a regent, would like to see or encourage more synergy, I guess, that comes between faculty and staff. I talked to a student who told me they're going to be graduating this spring. They've never had a full professor in the major that he's in actually teach in the classroom. And there are obviously full professors, and I'm not saying that, again, as a criticism, but I'm also saying those are the kinds of things that we should be looking at very carefully, because certainly we've got talented people, and the focus can't and shouldn't just be in one group or in graduate school or whatever. We've got to keep a balance there, again, as the flagship, and expose people to the resources that we have within the university.
Thank you.
Just a minute, George.
Jane, I've got to run. Could I just ask my question and then ask to be excused?
Okay.
Pleasure.
Thank you, George.
Thank you. I'm sorry. I've got a commitment. I've got to go. Your service to the university is enormous and commendable. And but I, as a corollary, Sonia's question, I worry that you know so much and have been so involved that you have an agenda to carry to the Board of Regents that might overwhelm your service. I really worry about that, and I wish you'd respond to that.
I anticipated a question along those lines, because I think it is it's certainly a very, very fair question to be asking somebody like myself that's had long, extensive involvement. That's why in the very first part of my opening remarks, I talked about what the division of responsibilities are, if I could call it that. There is a clear distinction about what those roles and responsibilities are. And I, as I said, I'm committed to what those responsibilities are, and I'm respectful of what those need to be. The University of Minnesota can't be micromanaged by all sorts of people, you know, that are like regents or anybody else for that matter. We've got to empower our president to do what needs to be done.
Yes. But you find it lamentable that we don't replicate the experience you saw at Washington Lee with the involvement between regents and management and department heads and so on. I'm not sure a president can run a university well that has regents running around interfacing with department heads and so on.
She gave me the hypothetical, and I ran with the hypothetical in what I would try to do to do something, you know, specific. And I wanted to be specific enough to answer her question. And to that end, I think what really has to be vetted out is, am I capable of separation of those duties and responsibilities? And I think that I've got a deep enough understanding of what those roles and responsibilities are to segregate myself from those, from the tasks.
I bring this up to help you to.
Yep, and I appreciate that.
Let you talk more about it.
Yeah.
Okay,
very good.
All right. George Sutton, please.
Mr. Devine, in the context of answering another question, I believe it was from Mr. Newell, you said, and I quote, our role is to support the president, unquote. Mm-hmm. I would like you to elaborate on that a bit, and then just on that particular statement, and then go on a little bit more to the role of the individual board member, the board, and the president of the university.
Okay. As I said, you know, the president is the chief executive officer of the University of Minnesota. And the board's responsibility is to give or to is to empower that person to be able to do what they feel they need to be doing and to set the agenda. It's their job to present the agenda of what the issues are, frame out what the goals, what the institutional direction looks like, and to put those various pieces together and then present those to the board. The debate of and the alignment of those goals and whatnot are obviously the responsibility of the board of directors or the board of the regents to go through and to vet those out and to make sure that it fits the mission and the direction that they've set, you know, for the institution, and following up with, the various components of what needs to be done to accomplish the goals of the university. The mission is first and foremost. Once the mission is identified, the process that's just recently unfolded is they've identified the person that they feel best suits the ability to carry out, what needs to be done. When I look back over the Regents' agendas for the last year, for example, I see a number of things that have been identified in Regent meetings, discussions, reports that have been produced that were words that rolled right from the new president's mouth during the listening sessions that he had here. So clearly, it's a collaboration in terms of what goes on. But the duties and responsibilities are executed by the president. And so to that end, I think that's where the separation occurs.
Okay, Joanne Stately.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
University has a number of constituencies, and we've talked about a number of those already from the students and faculty and the community and even the legislature. But we pride ourselves in calling ourselves an economic engine for the state of Minnesota. So what is our role, then, as an economic engine with our business communities?
Well, I think there needs to be a much greater collaboration between the university and the private sector. And I'll use a very specific example. Last week at the Minnesota Chamber, they had their annual legislative briefing, and they had their report of the surveys that they do of business owners, in Minnesota. And on the slides that went up, there was a big piece of a pie chart slide that was up in the PowerPoint presentation that talked about their inability to find trained workers or to find workers. And I'm not just talking about skilled workers, but they were talking about employees, by being able to find employees. Well, clearly, when I see that, there needs to be more collaboration and filling, the roles of what can we be doing to educate or prepare our students to go out and help fill jobs in the business economy here in Minnesota. I think certainly the other thing I would look at is, our research engine, if you want to talk about it in economic terms, our research engine, certainly there could be much more that we could be maybe doing to push research to business applications here within the state. And I know the new president has talked about that at some length, about what he's done at his other at the school he's coming from, and I think that that's very exciting because I think certainly we need more economic drive here in Minnesota. We need more job creation, all the things that all of us are aware of right now. And the fact that he has a focus on that specifically, of trying to link those two things together, I think is positive. The economic impact of the University of Minnesota statewide is immense, and we need to do everything we can to stay in touch with those constituents that can help make those outcomes more positive, I think, as a whole. I don't know if I was exact enough on the trying to come up with examples or specific things that I could use as an example to share.
Okay, Jim Erickson, and then Paul Taylor.
Mr. Devine, Margaret discussed your success through tenacity over a long period of time in a particular issue. I'm kind of a process person. I'd be kind of curious how you did that. Administration, Board of Regents, outside influencers. Give me a short summary of how you wound your way to the success that you've seen. And then I'd ask, if you were sitting on the Board of Regents now and a young Tom Devine came with that same issue or kind of problem to you, how would you act? This kind of goes to Richard Newell's question about region governance versus management. So yeah. You can give the short version of both those questions.
Well, it's been a long process. It's been, as Margaret pointed out, it's been almost a five-year process from the concept of what it is. It really originally stemmed from the fact that a lot of those fraternity and sorority houses on the University of Minnesota campus had an overlay of historic designation put on them, as a lot of now university buildings are going through this same process. And within those designations, there's a lot of cost responsibilities that go with those. Slate roofs, copper gutters, the rebuilding of properties back to their original states at the point they were built. and those were expensive. And so the issues of then bringing alumni involvement, bringing student participation in terms of what they pay to live in these buildings and these properties and to maintain them, the collaboration of reaching out within Orland Miller, the people within the university that are involved in architecture, design, the RFP process, the bidding process, all of that were steps that a group of people, some with specific talents of alumni volunteers that came along to shepherd the project along. And it still isn't done. I mean, it still is a little bit ongoing in terms of what needs to happen. But I think that, as Margaret pointed out, the embracing of the fact that there clearly is a housing shortage at the University of Minnesota is really the larger step.
At the regent level or the administration level?
Well, I think it's been a little bit of both. I don't think that the pressing need of housing really hit the regions probably to the degree that it now has. And partly it's been because of the speed up of the number of students living on campus or the demand for the space on campus. Clearly, the regions, I think, at all the campuses have now been overwhelmed by part of what's happening. And clearly at the Twin Cities campus, with the advent of tighter enrollment requirements, it's only accentuated the problem because those top 10% typically are looking to go to school to live on campus and have a four-year experience. Many of them are. And so the resources that, we haven't done a lot in that resource area, in the last 30 years to keep up with the demand.
So should the regents fix that or the administration?
Well, I think the administration's got to take it apart, look at what the issues are, and then financially to try to determine what it is that needs to be accomplished. I mean, we're talking I'm looking at not just the Twin Cities campus, but I think this is a statewide problem at all the campuses. Or I shouldn't say all, but at certainly some of the campuses, at least I can think of three right off the top of my head, of those that I've seen, it's a money issue. And the money issue is going to have to get addressed at the regent level to really identify. We're talking about tens of millions of dollars here. So that identification is going to have to, it's going to be a collaboration again between the administration's asking or looking at what the issues and the problems are and then coming forth with a plan or a priority or however they decide to frame out the issue.
Thank you.
Okay, now Paul Taylor.
I'm going to read you as Tom, not Mr. Devine, Brother Devine. Tom, earlier this afternoon, another candidate from the 3rd District in his profile talked about being an advisor to the Keller/Hurwitz Institute here at the University of Minnesota. I had the pleasure of money and banking from Walter Heller and econometrics from Levi Hurwitz. You said earlier this afternoon that one of your undergraduate student advisees is graduating in 4 years and has never had a class from a full professor. Okay. Both Walter Heller and Levi Hurwitz were as full a professor as you could be. What role would the regents play, if any, in having that circumstance change where the student 5 years from now wouldn't say, in 4 years, I never had a class from a full professor?
Well, in these kinds of issues, the first thing is the identification of the problem. And I think that I don't know in detail how these things come about in terms of bringing about change of like this specific issue. I think that the regent's responsibility is to listen carefully to the people out there within the state. And those that listen carefully, they're going to pick up things. And in terms of how the regents ultimately are going to impact, there's going to be opportunities to sit and to say, well, a funny thing, I ran across somebody that shared this story with me, and to share that kind of conversation. I have certainly looked at Bob Brunig's tenure at the University of Minnesota and said he's about the most approachable president that we've had. I mean, I've had the opportunity to meet most of the presidents all the way back through Malcolm Moose, and I can look at this and say, those kinds of conversations typically will spark discussion, which brings about a follow-up process. And I think that that's probably the best way to do it. Rather than somebody sitting at a regents meeting being critical, I think that a lot of these things have to happen, you know, in conversations and you know, in the identification of issues. And that's how a lot of it happens.
I think they've heard that a lot for years. And anyway, anybody else? Another question?
I have one.
Any more questions?
If I can.
Patrick, are you there?
I'm not on the list.
Would you like to ask a question?
I would like to. Could I please?
Yeah. All right. Last question.
Thank you. You've spoken very eloquently and passionately about education and, I'm going to say, the undergraduate experience. But critical to the mission of the university, as part of its land grant designation, is outreach and research. Somewhere there's going to come a question out of this, so please bear with me. What do you look at as challenges? And we could talk about short-term challenges if you'd like, particularly budget issues, to that land grant mission. But also I'd like you to spend a little bit of time thinking longer term of the challenges that there might be to that land grant mission.
I've spoken because a lot of questions have come up on the undergraduate experience. And it's not that I don't have great passion and concern for what the mission is as far as the research mission, agricultural missions, and the other things that we do within the state. Clearly, the focus of finding dollars, particularly federal dollars, dollars that come from other sources to drive the engine of research, needs to be cultivated to every possible extent that it can. Those dollars for research that in the forms of these grants and studies and all the things that happen within the University of Minnesota and within higher education are very competitive from everything that I've understood. My father had direct involvement with federal career education involvements in his lifetime, and I used to hear stories about what went on, and a lot of it is political, as we all well know. Those political dollars they get funneled to Minnesota, and if we look at our legislators our congressmen and our senators, in terms of what their role can be to help influence that, there needs to be a clear mission that's laid out to them in terms of how they can help us and how specifically. I know there's been some examples on campus now of some issues within the medical areas. All of a sudden, I think I heard a number like $150 million was available. And all of a sudden, boom, people went to work on that and got going and it moved that process and that application along. And this was out of federal dollars that all of a sudden, whatever that process is, miraculously appeared here this last 24 months. Our ability to be able to garner those dollars and be ready to take on and explain our ability to be able to use those dollars to advance whatever the research opportunity is needs to be done. And I think that's the challenge is again, we need to do a lot of education because I look at, you know, we've got some fairly young congressional representatives right now. They need to understand, you know, what does the University of Minnesota need? That's an educational process so that they, when things come along and dollars come along, they can connect University of Minnesota with something they're sitting in a hearing in Washington listening to. And that's how a lot of that, as I understand, that happens. My immediate family, we have three doctors, so I'm very in tune with the issues of what goes on in the medical fields and in those areas. And so it's ongoing, and it needs to, it's, again, part of the broader educational process that we all have to be involved in at the university and articulate that.
Thank you.
Okay, last question, Richard Idsey.
This is kind of a question in lieu of all the experience you've had or closeness to the university. Many smaller universities are either publicizing or claiming or whatever you want to call it, that they may surpass these larger universities, such as University of Minnesota, in research because it's too large and not agile enough to change course when things are moving so fast in this world. Do you think that the University of Minnesota is recognizing that and is agile enough to change course on a dime if they see it's necessary?
Well, I think there's a lot of advantages to the our scale, to our size at the University of Minnesota that should make us competitive with smaller institutions that are chasing the same types of grants or the same types of study monies that are available. The agility question is a good one, and I don't know that I can fully assess that or give you an answer about agility. I did see on just this, in this one medical thing, this one medical area on this grant, they moved pretty quickly, and there was a lot of focus of a lot of people I know that got going when it was made known that there were dollars available and there was three or four schools that were going to share in the bucket that was available out of Washington. And so agility is going to be important. I think agility is going to be even more important going forward here as the federal dollars tighten up, you know, and certainly as the state dollars tighten up. Agility is going to be an important ingredient. But, it's got to be part of the mission. It's got to be part of the direction. It's got to be a cultural thing that gets built into what we're trying to accomplish here, you know, at the University of Minnesota.
Yeah. All right. Would you like to make a closing statement at the end of this interview?
Yeah, I'll just quickly. let me just quickly say this. You know, I'm not a political wonk. I'm not a farmer, but I have a healthy respect for both. What I am is I'm time tested at the University of Minnesota. I'm in touch with the students' needs. Their need for expanded advising, their struggles, and the struggles with the finances that both the University of Minnesota is having and that students are having. I really identify closely with the middle class people of the second district in terms of what they've talked about, in terms of their impact of looking for their students to graduate in 4 years, and to look at what is happening in terms of the University of Minnesota. Clearly, the issues of enrollment have affected many of these people, and it's a sounding call, I guess you might say, right now in terms of what's happening. And my commitment is to be a good listener and to listen and watch and observe and to contribute in a positive way that I feel that I can. Improving the outcomes of the University of Minnesota is a win-win-win for everybody involved. And we've got to be focused on that. We've got to work very closely with our legislature to make sure that they understand what those needs are and what those desires are. And then we've got to make those build those bridges and do the things that we need into the business community to really take the good word of the University of Minnesota to a much broader audience of people. So with that, I thank you really for the opportunity to be here today. I look forward to being a part of this process, and I'm excited about what's happening at the University of Minnesota. I'm excited with the new leadership that we have coming on board, and I certainly would like to be a part of that, carrying out that mission going forward.
Thank you very much for your interest and support for the university, and have a good trip home.
Thank you.
Thank you.